broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Mark Kohler here, yours truly, with my amazing co-host, Matt Sorensen. Give it a shout.
Woo-woo. I'm always amazing. I appreciate that,
yeah.
Though. I
mean, yeah, you bet.
Superhero name or something. I gotta brand that.
I try to, you know, folks, we don't pre-record this in the sense that we have a script. So when I say give it a shout, that's your cue, Matt, just so you know.
Did you not hear my woot-woot? I mean, maybe I need to put
I did. Well, it was a little, you know, a little pause there, so we've got to work on that. But welcome, everybody. For those that are regular listeners, this is your chance to hopefully smile a little, smirk a little, have a little fun, and learn about tax and legal strategies that can help you better live your American dream, save taxes, build wealth. We've got topics every week we try to bring to you that are going to help impact your life in a positive way. And if you can put up with a CPA and a couple attorneys, we're going to try to keep it real. And today we've got another great topic, Matt. Am I right?
Yeah, we're talking about raising money online for your real estate deals. This has been a really big wave in the last few years as some of the laws about raising money and securities and all that have changed. So we're bringing on an expert. This is Adam Hooper. He's co-founder and CEO of Real Crowd. By the way, go to realcrowd.com. Even if you have no interest in real estate, if you want to see a really good website, go to realcrowd.com. It's an excellent website. They essentially raise money for people for real estate deals online and have a service for that. But he's going to come on and talk about this wave of raising money in real estate, how you do it from the one raising the money, and also talk about if you're an investor wanting to invest in a deal.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the interview. And I want to forewarn everybody that even if you're just a brand new investor or small business owner, young or old, and you're getting new into real estate, at least the show will be fascinating. It's a crazy the size of deals these folks are putting together. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times we hold ourselves back with our scope and vision of what we could accomplish. And so as you're listening to this, please stay with the whole show and see what they're doing in these big real estate deals and what your options are to raise capital if you've got dreams of raising some big money.
Yeah, baby.
Now, also, we got a little announcement here. We got to make sure all of you are aware of the final days of our estate planning special. This is our annual estate planning special in and around Memorial Day. There's a reason why we chose Memorial Day, if you get it. But we're trying to keep it light. No one wants to talk about their own mortality and plan their will or trust. But we try to bring this topic up for all you procrastinators out there once a year. And it's good prices too.
Yeah. And you know what? I was thinking about this. How many of you have life insurance out there? You're listening. Do you also have an estate plan? Well, you only bought that life insurance because you knew you were going to die one day. Why have you not got an estate plan yet? I don't understand that. There's like 50% of the population has a life insurance and like 10% has an estate plan. But you need both. All right. So get it done. We got you some discounts. And also, if your dad doesn't have an estate plan, why don't you just buy him one? Estate plan special. You know, you might get a little extra, a little cut in the estate for that. You never know.
Yeah, that's right. Ooh, good idea. So the special does run through the end of this weekend, Father's Day weekend. And you can get to kkoslawyers.com. KKOS is in Sorensen. So KKOS Lawyers, LAWYERS.com. And you'll see right there at the website on the homepage a little special logo icon. We're talking about this. And yeah, it is. It closes the end of business Father's Day. So that's a really nice opportunity to say, hey, Dad, you know, let me get you an estate plan. And they might really appreciate that. So do yourself and your family a favor. Anyway, so there's our infomercial for the day. So get your estate plan done. Big discount on that, only once a year. Work with a real lawyer to get it done.
All right. Now, well, we got some tax and legal tips to offer today. Before we get into the show, we always like to give you, you know, something quick and fast that may not apply to the topic, but something you can get out of every show. So I'm going to fire off with a legal tip. You want me to go first, Mark?
Yeah, go for it.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, I want to talk about the importance of non-disclosure and confidentiality agreements. If you're looking to sell a business or invest in a business, this could be an operating business, this could be a real estate deal, whatever it may be, and you want to disclose terms, the condition of a business, you want a business idea or concept, and you're worried about someone stealing that idea. I mean, how many of you have had that situation where you've thought, well, I want to talk to people about this, but I don't want them to steal my idea. How can I talk to them about it and get their advice or maybe ask them to invest money? Problem solved. Non-disclosure and confidentiality agreement. What's going to happen in that is they are not going to be able to disclose the information that is learned and, you know, that you provide them. They also have to keep it confidential. And you also want to add in something also called non-circumvent. And that prevents them from trying to go around you to do the deal themselves. So this is non-disclosure, non-circumvent, confidentiality. Sometimes it's just called an NDA for a short non-disclosure agreement to kind of capture all those things. But that's a good document and agreement. We have them in our office and essentially protects your information from someone obtaining that and then, you know, using it and squeezing you out of the deal somehow. But get this contract. It's really important if you're going to be providing confidential information or a new business idea to other people who may be investing in your deal.
Yeah, I like it. Great tip, Matt. And for any business out there, a business owner that pitching deals or projects, the NDA is something that you can have on your desktop of your laptop, computer, and just whenever you're pitching a deal, always have someone sign it. Just yeah. You never know, especially if it's your brother-in-law, someone in your church, your neighbor, maybe. Yeah, those are the type of
people usual
you want
suspects.
To have. usual suspects right there. All right. Good show. So yeah, you got to make sure you have everybody sign this before you share your cool deal because you never know who might snake it out from under you.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, you ready for a tax tip, Matt?
Oh, please.
Okay.
I've been waiting all week.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. So this tax tip is one that regrettably we have to bring up on a regular basis. But the IRS has really blown up the airwaves with email this last week and news releases. Again, there are these phone scam, phishing type phone calls going on regarding the IRS wanting money. And they will send certified letters. They will make phone calls and threaten. And it is just really, really scary. And every year, if not every quarter, every couple months, we have a client that calls us up asking for help in this. And it really is scary. It's hit close to home. We've had even some close family members get phone calls asking for money because they were down at the police station. And it's really scary. So here's what to look out for. Anybody that's asking for immediate tax payments through a prepaid debit card, that's how they're really pulling this off. So watch out for anyone asking for a prepaid debit card for any sort of state, federal, sales tax, franchise tax, state filing, anything like that. And usually, again, there's going to be pressure involved. And if someone is using pressure or fear, just say, oh, okay, well, let me call you right back. What's your name, your phone number, your website? Okay, I will call back with payment. But they do not like you to get off the phone. So whenever you feel that pressure, that's another key sign. And probably the best one to know here, and this I know this blows your mind, but the IRS will never call you. They won't. The IRS will never call you. So if someone's calling you from the IRS right there, you can get off the phone and just be rest assured that it was a scam. And it's just really sad. And now another tip in this, Matt, that I've heard a lot of scam prevention type bloggers and authors of books on ripoffs and things, is that you don't want to antagonize these people either. If you know they're a scam, just get off the phone. Yeah. Don't call them out. Don't call them jerks. Don't yell and swear at them. Because if you piss them off, you don't know what they can do.
Yeah. They're criminals.
Yeah. Keyword. Yeah. So
they have no morals. They don't care what the consequences are.
Yeah. They're just going to rip you off. I'm sure they wouldn't do anything worse than that, you know, right. If you call them a slime bag or whatever, you know. And so be really, really cautious of these types of phone calls, letters, requests for payment. If your accountant isn't actively involved in your life, or maybe you're using TurboTax and hacking it out online, and you need someone to just look at these types of notices, call our office. Pay for a few bucks. Just have someone look at it. Yeah. It's worth the time and money before you get taken advantage of. So there you go.
Yeah.
Sorry, regular issue. Sad to say.
Yeah, had to be said, though. You know, we had to do it. All right. Well, let's welcome our guest here. We have Adam Hooper. He is co-founder and CEO of RealCrowd. They are a platform online where people come to raise and invest money in real estate. They've been one of the market leaders. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Excited to see what we can talk about today.
Well, we should point out a fellow podcaster. He's no slouch to radio. So
absolutely.
What's your podcast?
It's called The Fundamentals of Commercial Real Estate Investing. Pretty exciting, I know. But yeah, we've a few episodes in, like 6 or 7 episodes in, just getting started, not quite where you guys are at yet, but we're excited to spread the knowledge.
Well, yeah. don't think the quantity of podcasts improves the quality. We don't want to give that impression. Our Fair listeners enough. Will verify that.
Hey, but so. There's one podcast on there. It's really good. Matt Sorensen was the guest talking about self-directed IRAs and real estate.
It's a must listen. It's actually, I think, our most listened podcast episode. So congrats, Matt.
Oh, dude, that just made my day. All right. Well, let's talk about this. We're going to talk about raising money for real estate deals online. This has been, Adam, something your company's knee deep in. So tell me about how you guys got into this and what RealCrowd does.
Yeah, so we started I guess it was actually end of 2012. Jobs Act was in full swing, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, all those platforms are really starting that first wave of donation-based crowdfunding. My co-founder and I were career real estate guys, and my background was in joint venture equity, so helping sponsors raise capital, mostly at the institutional scale. And we had a number of deals that were syndicated deals that were just such an inefficient process that we were kind of tired of banging our heads against the wall with that, you know, typical kind of hand-to-hand combat of syndication. Mm-hmm. And just saw a huge opportunity to bring a technology component to just the process of syndication, and then layering that in with the distribution potential that the Jobs Act brought, and using the internet as a distribution channel, it just made too much sense to not try it. And so we started the company early 2013, and a couple $1 billion worth of real estate later, and here we are.
All right. Now, you threw out a big word there called syndication.
Yes.
Now, for some of our listeners that are just kind of dipping their toes into the water of real estate and may want to invest in real estate, even some out there that are just raising capital on the wild, wild west of, you know, real estate clubs and joint ventures. Could you explain what syndication means so the average person knows where you're coming from?
Yeah, I mean, at its core, syndication is just raising money from a number of people, right? It's private placements that are country club network is kind of friends and family capital is the best way to describe it. So if you've got an opportunity, you want to go buy a building, you don't necessarily have all the capital yourselves. You're going to put a group of folks together to go buy that building. Mm-hmm. That's in effect a syndication, right? So the process of bringing multiple people together essentially to go out and purchase an asset.
And I think, if I may add, Matt, real quick, mm-hmm. is that if I think when the word syndication comes up, it's a different level than just putting together an LLC. If you've got 3 or 4 buddies and you're doing an LLC and you're going to go buy a little apartment building, okay. But once you add the word syndication, doesn't that imply more of, well, we better dot all our I's, cross our T's. We're going to probably have some securities rules, and we're going to have people involved that are more silent. Is that, would that be a fair statement?
I'll preface this with, obviously, I am not an attorney. but, you know, I mean, anytime you sell security, right, there's certain regulations that you should follow. Whether you have one or two people or you have 75 or 80 people, like, you know, some of the deals that are on RealCrowd do. So I think, obviously, you know, hopefully your listeners would get some counsel from you in terms of how to run those deals. But, you know, mechanically, whether you have one or two people as a truly, you know, friends and family capital raise, or you're doing something in the public, mechanically, it's very similar, right? There's really no difference between passing the hat amongst your buddies that play at the country club or raising capital through a platform like RealCrowd. It's very much a similar process. Mm-hmm. Just the means by which you get to those investors is what's really changed.
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to say that syndication probably means a little more legal rigmarole.
Sure.
Where partnering is a little more easy schmeasy, for lack of a better. That's a legal term, by the way.
Yeah, that's legal. Yeah, that's first year law school.
Easy you said schmeasy. It, not I.
Yeah, law school 101.
That's not third year law school, so that's first year. It's the easy schmeasy. All right. Well, tell me the Jobs Act. I mean, what really changed, though, about that was you could now advertise, right? So that was one of the big changes of why technology maybe wasn't deployed yet on this, is because it was kind of like, well, you can't really advertise too much. So tell me how the advertising has really changed it and that ability to raise money now.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head, right? So for 80 years, the SEC said, if you're going to raise money in a private placement, you can't advertise, right? You couldn't offer an investment to somebody you didn't have a pre-existing business relationship with. Mm-hmm. And the Jobs Act, which was originally for startups, small businesses to access capital for, you know, their operating side, real estate certainly wasn't the target of the Jobs Act. It's kind of been one of the biggest beneficiaries of it. But it was really created and centered around trying to give folks who are trying to start up a business a better way to access that capital. And removing this ban on, it's called general solicitations advertising, removing that ban on advertising was, to us, the biggest impact of the Jobs Act. Now, there's, I think, four kind of main sections.
Yeah.
We fall in line really on the Regulation D private placement sides, which can now, it's basically publicly advertised private placement is what happens. And that's been just a fundamental shift in how sponsors can raise capital and tell their story to try to attract that capital.
Yeah, because before that, I mean, you know, Mark and I as attorneys, we talk to clients like, hey, I want to raise money for this real estate deal. And before this, we were like, all right, go to people you have an existing relationship with.
Right.
They're like, well, I don't know that many people that have money, or maybe I only know a few. I'm not going to get to the end of raising enough money. Can I go make an advertisement? Yeah. Can I go on Facebook? Can I, whatever? Can I put up a website? Can I make a pitch in a real estate club or whatever? And it's like, nah, that's going to violate the rules. So this really, this is a big paradigm shift. And I think technology is now making it accessible to everyone. It's not, you don't just have to know people that have deals. Now there's sites and platforms. You know, there's RealCrowd, for example, where you can go find a deal and look up something if you're interested in the real estate space.
Yeah, I was saying it comes from both sides, right? And that's really at our core why we started the company, was access for both sides of the equation, right? You've got investors. Yeah, and I mean, we do more diligence than just a full-on bulletin board.
Of course. All right.
Yeah. But
caught
basically,
him off guard there.
Yeah, it's a way for real estate companies to access this pool of capital they'd never otherwise have the ability to get in front of, and a way for investors to get access to these deals that, again, prior to September of 2013, they just would have no way to build those relationships or to find these opportunities. So it's been, again, I think a pretty fundamental shift in how that whole capital formation process occurs from both sides, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah. Well, and I want to put this in perspective too, because Matt and I have held several shows over the years on the podcast where we talk about the difference between partnering, lending, or being an investor. And we call it kind of that dirty word, the I word, investor. Because mm-hmm. when you start calling someone an investor, you got more rules to worry about. And if you want to partner with someone, that's cool. That, you know, or if you want to lend money to someone. But this investor side is really where your space is. And I'd like to put that in context, because some of our listeners, you may go back and listen to some of these shows where we talk about private placements or securities. And really, that's your world, Adam. Is that correct? I mean, that's really
where
you play.
Yeah, and all the deals that are done on RealCrowd, the investors are approaching it with a very limited expectation of active involvement, right? They're very, very passive. And that's how we've set this up, is to, again, kind of partner passive investors with active managers, real estate companies that are in the business of finding opportunities, underwriting, capitalizing, adding value, and really kind of that hand-to-hand, the day-to-day operations of managing real estate, giving them a way to find passive investors to come in and purchase those assets with them.
All right. Now let's look at this from someone trying to raise money now for a second. So let's say I've got some experience in real estate. I've done some deals. I've got a new project I want to raise money for. And I'm like, all right, I want to try going online here and seeing how to raise money. What should someone look at once they're starting to go to that level of getting online, starting to use technology to find new ways to get investors or to get their deals, not on a bulletin board, like Craigslist or something, like a Craigslist ad.
Yeah. Hold it, Matt, make this sound so hard. Adam, can't I just go on Facebook and say, hey, I'm looking for money? Wait, that doesn't work, does it?
I'm not going to stop you from doing that. I wouldn't do it myself.
All right. So what's stage one? What do we do?
Yeah. So stage one is obviously, again, you're going to want to work with counsel, right? I mean, these are regulated securities issuances that we're talking about. So there is certainly a layer of making sure that you're doing it in a correct way from the regulatory standpoint, right? That's kind of step one is build a team. And I think one of our early podcasts, we kind of talked about, what is that team when you're looking to do this. And so first, obviously, a good counsel in your corner to make sure that you're not doing anything improper, because there are some pretty serious ramifications if you're not doing this correctly.
Mm-hmm. And LegalZoom does not sell these documents.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, not yet, at least. But we do provide those, just so people know. I mean, I'm in the middle of one right now for a commercial building in Texas right now. That's going to be this type of Reg D thing that's in your world. And we've always got Mark and I between us. We've always got one going at one time. Step one: get the legal counsel.
Get a lawyer.
Yep, I would say get the legal counsel.
Love that.
Check.
Yep, check. Then you got to get the deal, right? You got to have a deal. Typically on RealCrowd, we're doing lately a lot of value add multifamily, apartment complexes, retail, office, industrial. We've done a little bit of everything.
What's a good dollar amount? I mean, should we be thinking you got to be trying to raise at least $1 million or 500? What's the average in your world?
Yeah. So our average deal size, right, total purchase price, including debt and equity, is somewhere around 25, 26 million. So of that, you're going to have a bank loan anywhere from 15-ish million to maybe 20 million on the high end if you're high leverage. And the equity check is usually somewhere between maybe 3 to 8 million in total. Mm-hmm. So most of the deals that we're dealing with are, they're investment grade real estate, right? They're pretty, pretty big opportunities. That said, we've seen deals down to, 7 or 8 million, where folks are looking to raise anywhere from, kind of 2 to 3 million of equity. So you can certainly do it for smaller deals, right? There's other avenues out there and other platforms that are focusing on kind of smaller, more of the single family side or some hard money loans. There's platforms out there doing that. Most of the groups that we work with though are either equity requirements are anywhere from, again, kind of 3 to 8 million per deal.
Okay. Now, is it something that the average investor can get to your site and just say, hey, what? Oh, this is a commercial building in New York City, or one in Chicago, or it's a grain elevators in Nebraska? Or is that something that they can do and look at different deals going on?
Yeah. So the advertising rules, again, now with this general solicitation, you can advertise to anybody and everybody, right? You do, however, have to be an accredited investor to actually participate. So in Reg D private placements, you do have to be accredited. And that standard for verifying accreditation is a higher bar. For verification of that accreditation is a higher bar when you make a general solicitation. So historically, in the we'll call it the old school way, which is a true private placement. You're not advertising. You could rely on that investor self-certifying that they're accredited. Just check a box. You know, in a so the accreditation standards, $1 million net worth, not including your primary residence, or 200 or 300,000 of annual income, whether you file single or joint. So pre-general solicitation, you could just check a box and say, I certify I'm worth $1 million. The sponsor, the issuer, has to do nothing more than just rely on that self-certification. So the trade-off when you advertise, you can advertise it to everybody, but investors that come in, you have to actually verify that they are in fact accredited. Mm-hmm. And so the SEC has put together a safe harbor rule, which is you get a letter from an attorney, an accountant, a broker dealer, or an investment advisor that they've done the work to prove that that investor is actually accredited. Mm-hmm. So that is a difference. It sounds more onerous than it is. I mean, that's a big part of our process on RealCrowd is trying to streamline that process. So when an investor comes in, they say, yeah, hey, I want to put in $50,000 into this deal. We get all the information we need from them. And then we actually tie in with a third party verification service. And then the real estate company will get an attorney letter saying that the person is in fact verified as accredited. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest difference.
Let's define that one more time. So for people listening today, if you want to invest in these publicly offered securities that are through a platform that are advertised, whether even social media or websites, accredited investor is $1 million of net worth besides your home.
Correct.
Or not and, but or I make $200,000 to $300,000 a year of income.
Yeah, so $200,000 if you file your taxes single, $300,000 if you file joint.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then once I meet that bar, I now have a credit card or a driver's license to go shop on RealCrowd and go.
Yeah.
Well, you can always shop. You just can't check out, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So,
man, that was good. That was good. You're getting funnier on the show.
I know. So I've been going to Costco a lot, you know. okay, so – well, let's hit the other side of this, because I think as people have raised money, you've seen you can go online and you can go look for these deals, but you got to be accredited to buy to get in. There's mm-hmm. the other option. I think you were mentioning that what I would call kind of the traditional private placement. I just want people to know this, you know, where you can raise money from the people you know, your contacts, and you can take up to 35 people who are unaccredited in certain options. So if you're out there looking to raise money on a deal and you're like, you know what, most of the people I'm going to deal with are accredited, you could go into RealCrowd and put your deal up there. And this is called the 506C type offering, mm-hmm. Where you can raise a ton of money, as much as you want, really, for whatever deal you have. But if people are going to invest, they got to be accredited. If you're like, you know what, I don't know that many people who are accredited, or I know a few, but I know a lot of people I'd like to get in who maybe make $100,000, $150,000 a year, but they don't have $1 million net worth. They're not going to meet the accredited standards, but they got some money they'd throw in. You could still do an offering, but you're going to have to do the friends and family type, you know, work with who you know. You're not going to be able to get it up on a website and solicit it. That's kind of how it breaks down, right? So you're not, you're looking for the 506C accredited investor only can invest in the end.
Yeah. All the deals that are on RealCrowd are 506C because the real estate companies don't have a pre-existing relationship with the investors on RealCrowd. Right. Okay. And that's where the distinction between what you can do as a 506B private versus a 506C open. Yeah. And so then I would say in a 506B side, you can still raise unlimited amount of money from an unlimited number of investors. And you can also have, like you said, up to 35 non-accredited but sophisticated investors in that deal too. Yeah.
Now tell me. Go ahead. Okay.
No.
All right, I'll go.
That's the polite fight.
Yeah, I know. We're such gentlemen.
We're so excited to talk to you, Adam. We're both dying here today.
I'm gonna not yield the balance of my time to the gentleman from Idaho. So tell me practically, if I'm raising money on the site, okay, I've got the 506C, I've got the fund, I talked to the lawyer. How does your site practically work? I mean, what's the technology? Why is this cool if people – how does this help me as I'm raising money? What's the process like?
Yeah. And so getting back to kind of our original thesis around this method of raising capital is if you don't have a way to make managing a bigger pool of smaller investors easier than what you were doing before, then this is never really going to become a thing. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is you have to have both sides of the equation, the technology to be able to actually convert this interest and this advertising to actual dollars, you have to have. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, you know, that's at its core what Real Crowd is, right? Is the ability to convert people's interest into dollars, into actual investment dollars. So from a sponsorship standpoint, you know, we do some background checks. We look at your track record, history, bankruptcies, foreclosures, litigations, all that good stuff. Assuming you meet our minimums and you're approved to get on the platform, we'll work with you to onboard the deal, submit that out to our network of investors, about 20,000 plus or minus that we submit deals out to. You know, we'll do email campaigns, we'll do webinars, you know, live and recorded, and some other ways to make sure that the people are seeing these opportunities. Mm-hmm. Investors can review all the information, all the diligence information, financials. You know, we obviously encourage them to connect directly with the sponsors to ask any questions they might have about that opportunity. They say, I'm in for $50,000. They sign the documents, get their accreditation certificate, send the funds, and we're off to the races.
Now, exciting. And I love that this option is available to both sides of the equation, not only the investors, but those promoters or mm-hmm. sponsors, as you call them. So, hey, changing speeds here for a minute. Now, obviously, your company name is Real Crowd and plays off the word crowd, and crowdfunding is mm-hmm. a part of that big Jobs Act, is a piece of that. What do you tell people about crowdfunding? You're aware of that. I know that you've dealt with it. What do you tell people how that works and if it's an option for people raising money for real estate?
Yeah, so the regulation crowdfunding per the Jobs Act, and this is where there's some nuances that get a little bit confusing at times. There's what we do, again, which is the Regulation D general solicitations. There's Regulation CF, regulation crowdfunding, which has $1 million per year per company cap. So that limits, you know, it limits what you can do, right, in terms of raising yeah. capital. And it's there's some auditing requirements, some filing requirements, but you can raise from non-accredited investors if you go the Reg CF route. So we haven't done any deals in the Reg CF space. There's a few platforms out there that are, but we haven't done that. Again, it's just the scope that you can raise with that is just not really the fit for the kind of groups that we're trying to work with. The other interesting one that was part of the Jobs Act was this creation of Regulation A plus, which is essentially a...
That sounds good. I like that.
A plus is great, yeah. So that's basically a mini IPO where you can raise up to $50 million per year from non-accredited investors as well as accredited. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a few folks do that. I think there's a lot of interesting potential there. I don't think it's really taken off quite as we had hoped it would by now. But another very interesting avenue for people that are looking to raise a little bit more capital. It's going to take a longer time to get that through the SEC, 6 to 9 months. You know, probably 100 to 200,000 in legal fees, but you have the ability to raise up to 50 million from non-accredited. So we'll see how that continues to play out too, but definitely interesting.
Well, I like the sound of that, 200,000 in legal fees, but you know, no, but you know what? Here's funny. I just had this feeling to talk about big picture for a minute. Some of you listening are like, well, this is over my head, or this isn't my world. I'm not raising 50 million or something like that. But, you know, I had an interesting experience a few years ago with a real estate investor out of Northern California. And he was putting together this big avocado farm deal. And I thought it was a little ostentatious. And ultimately, it came together well for him. I thought it was cool, you know. But he said to me something, Mark. He said, Mark, you know what? In my career, I've learned that it takes just as much time to put together a little deal as it does to put together a big deal.
Sure.
And I was like... Huh. And that really sunk in with me because I was kind of giving him a hard time, like, oh my gosh, this is so much work. But I think a lot of us hold ourselves back because we don't increase our vision and the scope of what we could do. And do you have a story of that, Adam? Like maybe of someone that came into your space that they knew real estate, but maybe they weren't, you know, Warren Buffett, but they put together a deal and it turned out to be a dream deal, you know, do you have any stories like that? I put you on the spot, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think in my personal experience, it was kind of the opposite side of that was a lot of why we started this company was, again, in my background in the institutional side of things, to exactly echo what you said, institutions, you know, they're not going to do a deal unless they can put 15 or 20 million of equity to work. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these deals that are what we would consider kind of sub-institutional in size. So anywhere from, you know, $10 to $30 million of purchase price. And that's where we've really focused. And I think that's where we've seen a lot of success. And quite frankly, I think better economics in those deals because you don't have the big institutions chasing after them. And so I think what a platform like RealCrowd might do is take someone that's, you know, used to playing maybe in their local market, maybe they're topping out in that local market deals in the $2 to $3, $4, or $5 million range. If you can give someone like that they've got chops, right? They've got the real estate expertise. They know how to run a deal. If you can give them access to a bucket of capital that they couldn't get to before, and now they can do that $10, $12 million deal, you know, they can change how they run their business. They can do better deals. They can do bigger deals. They can have a bigger impact than what they might be able to do in that local market with that local group of investors. So I think just, you know, bringing liquidity into this market, I think can help people grow and do more deals by having access to more dry powder. You know, if you can do another 2 or 3 deals a year, that's some pretty significant super wealth that people can generate, you know, through getting access to capital like this.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about someone picking a platform, like raising money. And then I want to talk about the investors here for a second, too, before we're done with you. But what should someone look for? I mean, you got some other competitors out there. I mean, what do I need to look for when I'm picking the platform if I'm trying to raise money online now?
Yeah. From the sponsorship side, there's two main different structures of how platforms are set up and a third kind of less popular or less active, I guess. And the differentiator would be whether that platform operates on what we would consider like a fund aggregator model or more of a direct model like what we do at RealCrowd. So in a fund aggregator model, a sponsor takes a deal to that platform. And they say, hey, we want to raise X millions of dollars for this deal. Platform says, great, we'll go out. We'll get that out to our investors. We'll roll them into a single LLC. And then we'll basically do a joint venture with you as a real estate company. So there's no direct connection between the investor and the actual real estate sponsor that's, you know, driving the boat at the asset level. You're going to pay for that, right? I mean, there's certainly some convenience in only having to deal with one limited partner investor, but you're going to pay fairly handsomely in fees for that aggregator capacity. Mm-hmm. Other model, which is how we operate, which is a direct way, where the investor gets to interact directly with the real estate company. So we, as RealCrowd, we don't play a principal role in these deals. We don't, you know, we don't buffer any relationship between that investor and the ultimate real estate sponsor. We're very much direct. We don't charge this investor any fees to do that, so it's completely fee-free for the investor. We do charge the sponsor a flat fee for using our platform. And that's more for groups who are looking to grow their investor base that want to have that relationship and that connection. It's more than just the capital, right? They're trying to build out their base of investors that they can interact with and operate with. So I think that's one of the biggest differentiators between, if you're looking at the space, how do you want to grow your business, right? Is it just purely about the check at the end of the day? Then you can go to the aggregator model. If you're about that relationship and really kind of growing your network of investors, I think the direct model is a better fit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk about the investor side of things now for a second. Let's say I'm looking to invest in real estate online. I'm accredited. What should I be looking for? I mean, it's a little scary, I got to say. You know, it's not like picking a pair of shoes on Amazon or something or whatever. It's a little we're talking about people's, you know, life savings. This could be their self-directed IRA. This could be just, you know, their investment cash that they've worked years to build up. What should they be looking for when they're investing online?
Yeah, I'm kind of envisioning a million-dollar matchmaker, Patty Stanger, on her show. You know, we're kind of walking around the party, and you're deciding who do you want to invest with. I don't know.
What do TV do you watch, man? I don't even know what you're talking about. Is this on Bravo? Hey, what is this
for
on?
A guy that watches The Bachelor. Yeah, I mean, you watch Bachelor. Come on. So
I do not watch Bachelor.
What is it, Bachelorette? Which, I mean, your house of ladies there.
Yeah, this is confidential. We're gonna edit this.
Well,
okay.
So back to real estate.
we'll edit. We'll edit. Hey, sometimes Adam, my jokes work. Sometimes they don't. That's why we have an editor. So
it's perfect. It's the best thing for an editor to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the investor standpoint, though, You know, I would say it goes back to that same structural issue of how the platforms are set up, right? As an investor, do you want to have a relationship with the actual real estate manager, or do you want to have that buffer in between? Obviously, I'm a bit biased in that approach. because we made a very conscious decision to set it up because we understand how important that relationship is in the real estate world. So I think that would be one of the things is, you know, how is the platform that you're investing in structured? And then what are the qualifications of the sponsors that are actually selling the deals? What is their track record? What is their background? You know, how do they do through the last cycle, right? Are they, are they experienced? Is this their first few deals? Or are they, you know, they have a $500 million track record of executing on a similar property type. So I think a lot of it is just as you would analyze a deal that you're going to see from one of your friends at, you know, at the country club, who are you investing with? How are you getting access to that deal? And then ultimately one of the big things that we see, you know, obviously investors and rightfully so have a concern around is what are the fees for that deal, both from the platform and from the sponsor. And we actually did a whole podcast on, some of the customary fees and how to look at the breakdown of those and what's market versus what's not. So, you know, there is some intimidation, you know, these are pretty big tickets that people are riding anywhere from, you know, 10,000 to 100,000 plus into these deals, and it's a you know, not an insignificant amount of money. So certainly with that, you know, you kind of owe it to yourself to do some diligence on all the parties involved, platform and real estate company alike. And that's one of the things that we're looking to try to ease and change and give some more tools and education is how can an investor that maybe isn't a real estate expert, you know, how can they make a better decision? How can they become more educated to know what those things are to look for? And that's, you know, obviously a big part of the podcast is trying to educate people so they can know what to look for when they look at these different deals.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, fascinating. Love it. You got to love your job, waking up every day. All these zeros. I don't deal with this many zeros in my life. I mean, it's cool.
You know, we kind of lose sight of that. It is crazy. I mean, if you told me 4 years ago when we started the company, we'd have over $3 billion of real estate through the platform by now, it's a big number, but that's still, again, just, I think we're just scratching the surface of where this can go. So it's been a good four and a half years and we're excited to keep pushing and see where we can end up with it.
All right. Now what's your guys' podcast again? Why don't you drop that, and your website stuff, any place you want to send people, any resources you guys have?
Yeah. So just realcrowd.com. That's the main spot. And then if you go to the blog, realcrowd.com/blog, or you can send us an email, podcast@realcrowd.com. Lots of great information. You'll hear yourself on there, Matt. And again, hopefully we can provide some more education for people who are interested in real estate out there.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Adam. We really appreciate it. Well, folks, again, what an amazing show put together by Matt Sorensen and Adam here. I was just a bystander, I felt like, just watching from the sidelines. So folks, please continue to share the show with your friends and neighbors. And if you get a chance, please take a moment to give us a quick 5-star review and shoot us a copy of the post that you make, and we'll send you a copy of one of our books, preferably my copy, and we'll hook you up. So we'll see you next week for another episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.